friend of Schneerson from Brighton.
Oh. Right, okay. So we are at Parshat Ki Tetzé. Mm-hmm. When you go out to war, very military section of the Sedra.
Yeah, it's a little bit
disturbing.
It's
a difficult one.
Well, it's okay if you'd read the Hebrew and don't understand it. Just trying to find a blank sheet. Okay, right. Okay, so let's just see what the beginning of the Seder actually says. If you could... That's right, thank you. I'm just wondering if this would be better that way.
I'm thinking that.
Would it balance?
It would fall down by the way.
Would I be able to have one for my rabbi who's not Chabad? Would that be okay?
Yeah, yeah. I'll give you one at the end.
Thank you.
Okay. All right. Look, I probably won't use it. So let's just look at the beginning of the verse, at the beginning of the parsha. Ki teitze la milchama al ovecha, when you go out to war against your enemies. And the tano Hashem elokecha biyadecha, and God will put your enemy in your hand, v'shavita shivyo, and you take captives. And the text goes on with this... Eshet Yefat Toah, with the idea of a man seeing a very beautiful woman there, and he decides he wants to marry her, and he takes her home to his home, and the idea is she converts to Judaism, and then he marries her. So that's which is discussed in the Gemara in Kiddushin. Now, but we have just the beginning verse about the war, the battle. And for Rabbi Shneur Zalman, in the Kutei Torah, in his book of Hasidic Discourses, Rabbi Shneur Zalman lived around 1800 in Russia, and he wrote Tanya, and he taught many discourses. He explains this verse of battle as being the personal inner battle in terms of prayer. That during prayer, there is a kind of inner spiritual battle taking place, possibly, within the person. Because we can become very inspired and excited in prayer. And when we are doing that, it's very interesting what is happening inside us. It means that the divine soul is taking the animal soul, which is the part of us which usually gets very enthusiastic about material things, and suddenly the divine soul is making the animal soul excited about spiritual things. And the animal soul is filled with a sense of love and of awe, and it's the most beautiful feeling. So that battle is the battle to make the animal soul interested in something spiritual rather than just in something material. Hi, how are you?
I'm all right.
Hello.
Lovely.
Hi.
Okay.
I'm going to sit over there.
Right? Okay. So that's the opening verse. Thanks. And the discourse, which was said in 1965, is going to explore the opening verse in terms of the way Rabbi Shneur Zalman explains it, but also looking at it in terms of the literal battle that Rashi, that the Torah is describing. And Rashi says an interesting thing about this battle, that it's talking about what's called Milchemet HaRashut, a war which was not, they were not commanded to go to war. this is a war. It is part of the battles of kings of that time, that there would be a battle. But this is, and that's called Milchemet HaRashut, a permitted battle, but it's not Milchemet Mitzvah, a battle of a command, such as when they were coming into the land of Israel, which was a different atmosphere. So that's what we're going to explore, and it's basically about the individual prayer, and then it's going to be contrasted with the other aspects of spiritual service of God. Oh, yo, yam, ba, ya, ya, yo, 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 ya, ya, da, ya, da, yam, bo, bo. Ayam, ba, ya, yam, ba, yam, bo, bo. Ha, ya, da, dam, ba, ya, ya, da, dam, ba, ho, ya, ho, ya, ya, da, dam, ba, ya, ya, ho, ya, ya, da, dam, ba, yam, ba, yam. Ha, ya, da, dam, ba, ha, ya, da, dam, ba, yo, yam, ba, ya, da, dam, ba, ho, yam, ba, ya, da, dam, ba, ho, ya, ya, ho, ya, ya, ho. When you go out for battle against your enemy, over your enemy, Rabbi Shneur Zalman explains in his book Likutei Torah, Collected Teachings, and in brackets the Rebbe adds that it's explained in teachings by the later Chabad teachers, the Mittler Rebbe, the Tzemach Tzedek, and later rabbis of the Chabad movement. The Ita B'Zohar, line 5, it says in the Zohar, Sha'at Slota, Sha'at Krava. The time of prayer is a time of battle. Or maybe Gamashe Katuv, and he also quotes what is written, that Jacob says to his sons, Asher lakachti miyad ha'emori, which I took from the Amorean, b'charbi u'b'kashti, with my sword and my bow. So the point is that he is telling Yosef that he's giving him an extra possession, which is the city of Shechem. And he's saying, this city of Shechem is going to go to you, Nablus, that's going to go to you, which I conquered, b'charbi u'b'kashti. Now, b'charbi u'b'kashti in Hebrew means with my sword and my bow. But the Tegem Unkelus, the Aramaic translation of the Torah, gives a completely different explanation of what does it mean. Not my sword and my bow, but bitzloti uvavauti, with my prayer, with my supplication. So the concept of what we think of as a battle actually being prayer. V'hainu shema shekatuv, and that means that when it says at the beginning of the Sedra, ki teitzei lamilchama, when you go out to battle, kai ala milchama sheba'avodat hatfila. It's talking about the battle in the service of prayer. That inner battle is what it's really talking about.
Oh, wow, that's amazing. You've just completely turned it on its head in one sentence.
Well, another aspect of this is that when we learn about the seven nations in the land of Canaan, these are the seven midot ra'ot. These are the seven bad qualities that are in a person, which we have to conquer and uproot and change. So the whole battle dimension of the conquest of the land of Israel is internalized in Hasidic thought.
Why did you say that?
Well, it's in Likutei Torah. It's in Hasidic teaching.
Wow.
Now, Umosiv Rabbeinu, so this is line 10. Umosiv Rabbeinu Hazaken Nefaresh. And the Rabbi Shneur Zalman continues to explain. Gam et Hemshech HaKatuv, also the continued part of the verse, Ki Teitzei LaMilchama, when you go out to battle, Alovecha, against your enemies. Now, Perush, that means, ki teitzei lemilchama zu, when you go out to this battle, lenatzeach koach hamitave, to conquer the power of desire, shebenafsho, which is in the soul of the person. So we have a power of desire inside us. And the question is, where is that power of desire focused? What is it aiming for? Lekarav v'ta'anugei olam hazeh agashmiyim, to try to cool it off as regards the physical pleasures of this world, ulehitavcha, and to change it, la'avat Hashem, to love of God. Now this is, in a sense, it's a concept of channeling. Sometimes the term channeling is used. A person has a strong libido, a very strong power of desire. Now, this can be something that can either drag the person into very materialistic and hedonistic way of approaching life, or that very same power of desire and of feeling pleasure can be transformed into spiritual pleasures, the pleasure of learning Torah. What's the phrase? Tov li Torah picha me'alfe zahav kesem. The Torah of your mouth, God, is more pleasant for me than thousands of pieces of gold and silver. And many such verses. That's throughout the various parts of Tanakh. But the whole idea that we can have an intense love and desire and fulfilled feeling of joy through Torah and mitzvot and a sense of connection with God. So Rabbi Shneur Zalman says, line 14, that when we are embarking on this battle to transform our inner animal self, our power of desire, that it should be directed towards godliness, tiyeh bevchinat alovecha, you have to be, this is what Rabbi Shneur Zalman says, over your enemy. Now there's a special connotation here, what it means over your enemy. I'd just like to tell you a very common explanation of this verse, which is very relevant to all of us, really. The enemy can be challenges in our life. And in order to deal with challenges, we have to be able to feel a confidence in dealing with them. And so a very famous explanation of this verse is that you should know that from the very beginning you are over your enemy, you're on top of your enemy, you're the one on top. And here we're talking about the moral enemy as well, the enemy which is a challenge in life, but you know you can deal with it. But here he's saying something a bit different. Now we're talking, let's say, of the power of love. Now there are false varieties of love. Sometimes so false that they can get the person seriously into trouble. It can lead the person into very wrong thoughts or speech or behavior and doing wrong things. So, where does this bad love come from? From the very beginning of the Hasidic movement, one of the earliest teachings that we know of from the first generation of Hasidism is from the time of the Baal Shem Tov. And the Baal Shem Tov taught an approach to understanding the different kinds of feelings that we have within us. And sometimes the feeling might be inappropriate and even dangerous. To realize that that feeling, let's say that love, that inappropriate love, really comes from above, from Sfirat HaChesed, from the attribute of love, of the divine love. And it has fallen down into this world and it's now sticking to the wrong things. So it's a love of money, or it's a love of this, or it's a love of that, which is coarsening the person and limiting them and making them act sometimes in a totally inappropriate way. But if you realize that the love comes from a more exalted source, you're able to elevate that love and you're able to go to its root. And so that's what it means, that we see the love, that you are on top of your enemy. The enemy is the inappropriate love. And that inappropriate love has a source which is very exalted and is holy. The Hainu, line 15, Bifchinat Shorsham Lamaila. You look at the root of the emotion above. Ki ein ra yored milamailo, because no evil descends from above. Above, everything is pure. V'shorsham hutov, and above, the root of this inappropriate feeling is actually good when you look at it above. Shuhu miprinat merkava elyona, it comes from the upper chariot and upper very exalted spiritual manifestation, shibikdusha, which is holy. So it's somehow a subtle way of changing focus and realizing that this love actually has a holy source. Umosif levaya, and then he continues explaining, Rabbi Shneur Zalman continues explaining, Sha'alovecha, the first comment that I gave before, that when it says you are over your enemy, Hainu lemaila me'avecha, you are above your enemy, She'ein la'oyev shelamato, because the enemy below, the inappropriate love, does not have any shlita v'achizah sham, does not have any control or grasp there in the spiritual realm. So you know that you can transcend the inappropriate love and reach to the exalted root. Now, this is a very interesting passage because it was considered by many of the early leaders of Hasidism that this teaching of the Baal Shem Tov could be a bit dangerous. If a person thinks all he has to do with inappropriate love, nothing wrong with the inappropriate love, just I have to think about the root. Hi, sweetie. I just have to think about the root of the love. See? Just have to think about the root of that love. Okay. Do you want to sit here and learn, or you want to sit and read? You have the choice. Whatever you like.
I don't quite understand it.
Yeah. Go on.
What you call bad love, it doesn't disappear. It's not been dismissed by. Who knows that it's in Shosh and Shosham? How? I don't want to say impractical, because it's not practical, but it's still how it turns in the eyes of the inappropriate person. I don't understand how can it be.
How you can get rid of it.
More or less.
Well, it's interesting. I mean, there are two ways of thinking it. One is the concept of sublimation, you know, the Freudian concept. That we have a power, we have a certain sort of power within us, and we sublimate that. So in other words, and you know the concept sublimation in chemistry. Yeah. So you are heating something here, let's say iodine crystals, and the vapor goes up, and you have some kind of cold glass thing, and the iodine sublimates and settles on the upper thing, and it's now in a completely different form. You know, so he said that as a result of quite earthly passions within the person, you have them sublimated in the form of art and music and various kinds of creativity. You know, that's Freud's perspective, but it fits quite well with this Hasidic concept, that the same power which can come down in what might be a dangerous and inappropriate form here in this world you can take the energy of that and somehow rechannel it, and it focuses on a more spiritual or sublime
It still exists somewhere. I mean,
well, that's why a person can never trust themselves, right? In Jewish thought, there's always a sense of zehirut, there's always a sense of being careful and never saying that someone is beyond suspicion or something like that. So never imagining that one is totally in control. Yeah. So you always behave in a very careful way.
Right.
So concept of yichud, for example. Mm-hmm. A man and a woman not being alone in a inappropriate way, in a room, you know, shut away where there's no other person there.
Mm-hmm.
So in Jewish law, that's something to be careful about. Who says, you know, this person's a very saintly woman and a very, you know, reliable man, you know, but you don't take anything for granted.
Yeah.
That's
because it's we didn't read it, but with the continuation of it, if he took captive a beautiful woman, he can take her. I don't understand how would this come after that.
Okay, well, the discourse doesn't deal with that with that issue. That's a matter for further research. You know, what is the beautiful woman who becomes a captive? What does she represent in terms of this service of prayer? Maybe it's the beautiful ecstatic moment of saying the Shema. You know, that's the.
But there's no internal war here.
In fact, the Zohar says, there's a beautiful passage in Tikkunei Zohar which says, anyone who kills the snake, and the snake means the evil desire, anyone who kills the snake is given the princess. Zehu Tfila. And that is prayer. So the princess is prayer. So the person transcends their own physical desires at this point, in this situation, and reaches some spiritual perspective and is able to enjoy the princess, which in this case is prayer, you know, so the ecstasy of prayer. Yes. All right. So here we're speaking about this whole idea of going out to battle against one's enemy. Maureen, could you pass this spar, please?
Yes. This one?
Yes, please. Thank you so much. Very wise of Nicole to put these cold drinks.
Thank you. Yeah, I'm good, thank you.
Yeah. Thanks. Thank you very much. Right. Okay, now, Bet. So now we have the Rebbe trying to balance different dimensions of Torah, which is a special quality of the Rebbe. His namesake, the Tzemach Tzedek, the third Lubavitcher Rebbe, would do the same thing. He would take a Hasidic mystical concept, try and put it together with a halachic concept, and see how they match and how they relate. So here the Rebbe is taking this spiritual teaching of Rabbi Shneur Zalman about prayer, and is putting it together with Rashi on the Chumash, who is not talking about prayer, but talking about war.
Mm. Right. That is a real gift to be able to do that, isn't it?
Yeah.
Well, is it a gift or is it a duty? You see, the Rebbe saw the idea that there are different parts of Torah and they all have to relate to each other rather than keeping them separate as a task, like this is the task of our time.
Wow.
But v'tzarich la'avin, now we have to understand. Eich yatim perush Rabbeinu Zaken im perush Rashi. How does the explanation of Rabbi Shneur Zalman compare and relate to Rashi's explanation? And what does Rashi say? Rashi looks at this in a very practical way. There are different kinds of battle, and this battle is shebemilchemet harashut hakatuv medaber. The verse is talking about a permitted war. Why? Ubahaktim. Let's understand this. Shahochacha shel Rashi, the proof of Rashi, shebemilchemet harashut hakatuv medaber, that the verse is talking about a permitted battle, he mimash shekatuv v'shavita shivyo, is from the phrase that you will take captives. Ki, because b'melchemet Eretz Yisrael, in the battle to conquer the land of Israel initially, here we are over the page, the original battle when the Jewish people led by Joshua came into the land of Israel to conquer it, ein lomar v'shavita shivyo, you wouldn't say that they would take captives, shahari kva ne'ema, because it says, lo techaye kol neshama, do not keep anyone alive. Now this afternoon I looked up carefully in the Rambam, in Maimonides, and the Rambam says that is only if they want to make battle. If they make peace and they agree to accept the seven Noahide laws, then they do live and they continue to live in the land of Israel. So this is only the people who will not accept the seven Noahide laws and will not accept that the Jewish people should come into the land of Israel. So that is the practicality of what is called the war, which is not a free war like this. So therefore they wouldn't take captives in the ordinary sense. Avol Masha Katuv, but this verse saying, Ki teitze la milchama, when you go out to war, Azay tiyeh alovecho, then you will be over your enemy. Yesh lefaresh gam bipshuto shel mikra, you could explain this also in the simple meaning of the verse, lo rak b'melchemet harashut, not only when we're talking about a permitted war, ele gam b'melchemet chova, but even if it was a war that you have a duty to conduct the war. V'haynu shekatuv ze balevaya, this verse comes to explain, lo rak hadin de v'shavita shivyo, not only the law of taking a captive, at the end of the verse, ele gam shahayetziyam la milchama, that the going out to war, tzicha liyot ba'ofen de alovecha, it has to be in a way that you are over your enemy, you're on top of your enemy, with a confidence, sha'al yedei zeyiyah ha'nitzachon ba'milchama, so that through this there will be actually victory in battle, if you're talking about it in the simple military sense of what this verse means. Va'al derech ma shekatuv b'parsha shelifnei zeh, as it said in the section before this, ki teitzei la'milchama, when you go out to battle, v'ra'ita sus v'rechev, and you see many horses, am rav mimcha, a great population of soldiers, lo tira mehem, don't be frightened of them. Haynu shetochen ha'katuv hu atzivui, and so therefore the command of this verse is, lo tira mehem, don't be frightened of them. Okay. So that's the... So that's the way we could understand this concept, this verse, in terms of ki teitze, let's move a line or two, ma shekatuv kan, ki teitze la milchama olavecha, when you go out to war against your enemy, that shahatzivui hu shayitziyah la milchama tiyeh alovecha, that you're fighting against, you are confident and you feel on top of your enemy. Hainu, that means lehitbonen b'mahuto shel ha'oyev, to think about the nature of the enemy, kafi shehu b'shosho mekoho. Now you can think about the enemy even in the way that he is in his source, and missing out the brackets, she'al yedei zeh titbatel ha'yira mimenu, you will not be frightened of him, v'yeh kal yoter lenatzcho, and it will be easier to conquer him. So you can translate the whole verse in terms of a real battle, which is the simple text of the Torah, but the Rebbe is going to apply this back into the concept of prayer. Umuvan shekol zeh shayach gam b'milchemet chova. So all this applies when there is a battle that the Jewish people have to fight this battle in order to conquer the land of Israel right at the beginning when they came into the land with Joshua. Uvemele gam b'milchama haruchanit shebavodat ha'tfila. And if that is the battle which is a duty to fight going into the land of Israel, it also works when you're considering prayer. So that's fine. So if it's a battle that we have to take part in, so there's either a physical battle or the spiritual battle of prayer, and all that's fine. You see, the Rebbe is matching the Rashi's way of looking at the verse and the spiritual way, the Rabbi Shneur Zalman's way of looking at the verse. So if you're considering a battle which is a duty, we all have a duty to pray. And the Jewish people have the duty to go into the land of Israel. So when you say it's a duty, then that fits for both of them. Omnam, line 24. Now here comes the problem. However, mitzad siyum ha-katuv, when we look at the end of the verse, which says, v'shavita shivyo, and you should take a captive, she'enu shaykh b'milchemet eretz Yisrael, which means it is not the battle to conquer the land of Israel. It's a later battle. It's King David fighting against the Philistines or against the Arameans or someone else. Mishtane gam shuto shel mikra. So then the simple meaning of the verse changes. B'mashe katuv ki teitzeh l'milchama, when it says going out to war. She'en, even just the simple translation. She'en perusho ka'asher teitzeh l'milchama, when you go out to war, because you're definitely going to go out to war. No. If it's a permitted battle, if it's a battle that you might have and you might not have, it has to be translated ela im teitzeh l'milchama, if you go out to war. Kevan shebemilchemet harashut hakatuv medaber, since the verse is talking about a permitted battle, which doesn't have to be. You could have the Jewish commonwealth in the land of Israel without having any battles whatsoever. That would be the ideal. Once they're there in the land of Israel, so why should there be any battles at all? Now, if that's the case, how does that relate to prayer? Va'al pizeh einu muvan. And if you look at it this way, it's not understandable. Eich yatim zeim perush Rabbeinu Hazaken. How does this fit with Rabbi Shneur Zalman's explanation? Shekai ala milchama shebaavodat hatfilah, that it's talking about the inner battle during the service of prayer. Hare milchama zu eina roshut. This battle of prayer is not a permitted thing that you might do it or you might not do it. Eila chova. It's a duty. It's a duty to pray every day. So, v'adrabah, and on the contrary, chova hayoter gedola, it's a very important duty. Od yoter ma'achiyuv dekiyum mitzvot. In some opinions, even more important than keeping mitzvot themselves. He gives a note to a passage in Hasidic teaching. So prayer is something very important, especially in terms of our inner spiritual state. So therefore, that is the question: how can this be called a milchemet harashut, a permitted battle, and not a battle which is a duty? And emphasizing even more why this is an important battle in line 2 on page Zayin, v'chamuvan mimash mavar Rabbeinu Hazaken, as can be understood from what Rabbi Shneur Zalman says. She'inyan ha'tfilah, what happens in prayer? Hu she'yakhiv kol echad et nafsho ha'ba'amit. Each one of us brings our animal soul la'alota, to elevate it, u'lukoshcha b'shorsha, to join it to its root, she'hi gam ken miyasod ha'esh, which is also the element fire. Okay, so we're going to explore this in a moment. The process of prayer as fire meeting fire. Okay, but first of all, let's just see if we can understand what his question actually is. Do we all understand this? If the war is a war that you must undertake, so we can understand it fitting with the concept of prayer. Prayer is something that we have to do. But if we say that the war is a war that maybe there will be such a war, maybe there won't. So how does that fit with prayer? Because prayer is supposed to be a duty. at the same time, and the reason why it's a duty is because it's something so powerful, which we're going to examine in a minute, the fire meeting fire in prayer. Okay, so now let's have a look at this. So there's the idea that each one of us has an animal soul within us. And what happens in prayer, line 4, Lahalota ulakashra, that we elevate the animal soul and we bind it, b'shorsha, to its root, shehigamken miyasod ha'esh, which is also the element fire. You see, in the animal soul is fire. And it's the fire in the soul which is the burning passion that the person feels. So he might feel a burning passion for a new car, or for a laptop, or for the latest something. Whatever it might be. So that's the burning passion in the animal soul here in this world. But when you connect the animal soul higher up, it connects to the element fire beyond. Umakor chutzva v'yisodata b'harei kodesh, and the very source from which it's hewn, its foundation in the sacred mountains, merkava ha'elyona, the upper chariot. Now the chariot is described in Yechezkel, the book of Yechezkel, the book of Ezekiel. The first chapter describes this spiritual chariot, which has pnei Aryeh, the face of a lion, upnei Shor, and the face of an ox. And that is really an upper dimension relating to our own animal soul. And our animal soul is down here in our own heart. And it comes down. So let's just see if we can depict this graphically on this somewhat uncertain surface. So there's the Merkava up here. So for example, the face of the lion expresses love, ahava, at that exalted level. But then it comes down through something which is called the 70 princes.
70 princes?
Yes, now the 70 princes relate to the 70 nations of the world.
Yeah.
And it also has to do with the constellations and the stars. Wow. And that's a kind of a channeling down from that exalted level till it comes and it's part of what is in the human heart. So there we have the human heart, and in that heart there is also a flame of love which is there. And the point is that something which is very sacred in its origin has come down, and now it's in the heart, where it might be a burning lust in an inappropriate way.
I'm really surprised about that, that it's not from the Sitra Acha then, or the Yetzer Hara. I would have thought it would be.
Well, it's very interesting that from the Chabad point of view, everything in existence ultimately is good.
Right.
It all starts off as something good, only it falls down and it then takes the wrong kind of form.
Right.
And that's why it can be elevated to its root. We're not talking here about certain kinds of horrific violence or something like that.
Right.
The Rambam discusses, I was just recently looking at this, the Rambam discusses in a tract called Shmoneh Prakim, 8 chapters, which is his introduction to Ethics of the Fathers. He discusses what is better. Is it better to be naturally spiritual and not desire any inappropriate things? Or is it better to be someone who has negative desires, problematic desires, but he controls them? So he says, from the point of view of the philosophers, it's better to be a spiritual person who only wants the right thing. But from the point of view of the sages of the Talmud, it's better to be a person who has passions, but controls them. But then he says, you know what? We can put these two opinions together because they're different kinds of desire. There are desires which are horrific. person wants to kill, rape, do terrible things. That's something that it's better, everyone agrees, it's better not to have that kind of desire at all. It's better to be disgusted by that kind of behavior. But on the other hand, there are other kinds of desire, whether it's for food or other kinds of activity, where the person has to control himself. And so from the point of view of the sages, the way he presents it, the fact of controlling oneself is a very important dimension in life. And he quotes what the Talmud says. Don't say, I don't like non-kosher food. Say, I like it, but the Torah has told me I mustn't have it. So, of course, what do you want to say?
Torah Misina, that's right.
Torah Misina. But in fact, one tries to train oneself, you know, in all areas to try to have a more spiritual approach to life. But there's always a level of battle. There's always a level of challenge. So the point is here that this energy of love, which at an exalted level is very spiritual and sacred, comes down and it's there in the heart, and now it might be focused in an inappropriate way. Now, when you say the Sitra Achra, the power of evil, so that might be something leading, you know, over the edge completely, right? So there's different kinds of, that might be a way of thinking of that. Now, we've got line 8. After it comes down and it chains downwards, v'hitlabshut b'shim sarim, and it's enclosed in the 70 princes, shmarei ha'ofanim, which is this relates back to the image of the chariot. Nimshach ta'anuge olam hazeh, you get the idea of the pleasures of this world, and they become very prominent. V'hakoach hamitaveh, and the power of desire for these pleasures, shulgam kein bechinat chamimut esh, which also has the quality of the heat of the fire. V'gam hayetzer hara, and also the evil desire itself, hu esh za dolek, is like a foreign fire which is burning fiercely. V'tzarich lahalot et nefesh ha-bahamit, and you have to elevate the animal soul, l'shorsha, to its root. P'chinat esh shelamayla, the upper fire. So by bringing the heart and the heat of the heart, the heat of the animal soul upwards to the radiance and the heat, the fire of the energy of the Merkava, the face of the lion, and so on, that is fire meeting fire, and it's transformative. Umamshech levaya, and Rabbi Shneur Zalman explains further, shebechol yom, that every single day, yitzcho shel adam mitgaber alav, the evil desire of a person takes control over him. That we're attacked by the evil desire in one way or the other. V'tzarich bechol yom, and every day we have to lahamshech p'chinat eish shel amayla. We have to try and draw down the fire from above, in order to join with the fire inside our heart and transform it into something positive and something good. So there's always this battle going on. Because it's written, Yamim Yutzahu, days are created. You see, it's very interesting. What is a day? A day is like a time of confrontation. It's the time that we are here in this world and we have all kinds of challenges and we face the challenges one way or the other. Sometimes we win, sometimes we lose. And we face those battles, and then it's the end of the day and we go to sleep with the help of Hashem, and we wake up the next morning for another battle, for another day of challenge. And that's the whole idea of a day. So the day is really something very spiritual, because it's like an opportunity for this confrontation, which hopefully will have a positive conclusion. Now, so these days, sheyesh misbar v'kitzva lishnei chaye adam, there is a fixed time from the point of view of God to the years of the life of man. Yemesh notenu bahem shivim shana, as it says, the days of our lives are 70 years. V'lo nitnu lenafsho elekit shebekirbo. These years are not given to the divine soul, ki aneshama eina tzricha tikun la'atzma, because the divine soul doesn't need to be transformed. The divine soul is here to affect the animal soul and the body and the world around us. Elam mispar chayei adam, but the number of days or the life of a person, nitan lihitlabesh bo nafsho habamit, is in order for his or her animal soul to be enclosed in. V'shanav k'tzuvim lo, and his or her years are fixed, b'mispar sheshiara, according to the number which chochmato yitbarach, which the divine wisdom estimated, sheyuchal laseit b'nafsho, how much time he needs for his soul, lahalot mimena kol kach kochot, to elevate from the soul certain number of powers, v'nitzutzim, and sparks, shenaflu shama b'shvirat hakelim, which fell into the realm of darkness through the breaking of the vessels, kamavua inyan ze, as this idea is explained, b'ribui ma'amarei chasidut, in many Hasidic teachings. So there we have the animal soul facing this confrontation every day, and the task that we and the divine soul have to somehow connect it above.
What the Tanya says about the Haneshama Eina Tzricha Tikun La'atzma.
Haneshama Anev Shelokit.
He says that the Tanya, he speaks about it. The 21 footnote.
Right. See, Tanya chapter 37, which he's referring to there, speaks about the way the Nefesh Elokit comes into the world, enclosed in the Nefesh Bahamit, enclosed in the animal soul, and our physical body, and everything that we have in our personal life, our clothes, our home, the different things, our activities. And what we are actually trying to do is to transform the world. We're trying to illuminate the darkness of the world. And that begins with the divine soul and the animal soul. And from the animal soul, it spreads to our body. And chelko ba'olam, the person's portion in the world. But the divine soul is the poel. It's the one which is doing it.
Right.
Now, it's true that the divine soul gains from this process. By the fact that the divine soul comes into the world, transforms the animal soul, and so on, it gains. It's gaining something. But it's not the same kind of tikkun that it needs. It's the animal soul which needs the tikkun. There's a different kind of tikkun you could speak of for the divine soul. So you see, the thing is that if the divine soul was in the world 100 years ago, and it didn't fulfill its task, it didn't complete its task, so it might come back into the world in Gilgul and be inside one of us, and it's now got to fulfill the task that it had to achieve then. So it's the divine soul that's coming back into the world in order to achieve things it didn't achieve earlier. So that's another kind of tikkun. But the main kind of tikkun, the transforming of negative into positive, means what the divine soul has to do to the animal soul.
Okay. Okay.
Now, so we're at the end of line 24. Va'al pizeh nimtza, and so according to this we find shehamilchama sheba'avodat hatfilah, that the battle which is taking place when a person prays, which is really a stage for this inner transformation. Hu inyani kari, it's something essential. It's a central concept in our service of God. Va'ad shezoi tachdit kol inyan yeridat haneshama baguf. And in fact, this is the real purpose for the whole idea of the soul descending into the body. Mi'igra rama, as it's described, from a high roof, levira amikta, to a low, to a deep pit. Ve'eich efshar lomar al zeh, so how is it possible to say about this, b'milchemet harashut ha-katuv medaber, the pasuk, the verse is talking about a permitted battle which might take place or might not take place. Okay, so you see this juxtaposition of two completely different ways of looking at the Torah. One is the mystical explanation, and the other is the practical sort of halachic, which is in the remote past, in the time of these battles of King David. But nonetheless, what the Rebbe is doing is drawing these two together, and he's presenting this question. So here we have this fundamentally important idea of prayer. How can we say that this is roshut? This is just something, if you like, you can do it, or if not. You understand the question? Mm-hmm. Okay. So now let's see what the answer is. Dimu. Acheinyin hu, but the subject is as follows. The answer is as follows. Shegam lefi perush Rabbeinu HaZaken, even according to the way Rabbi Shneur Zalman explains it, Shema shekatuv ki teitzei lemilchama, that when it says going out for war, kai ale milchama shebeavodat hatfilah, it's talking about the battle in prayer, efshar lefaresh, we can explain these words, kamo lefi perush Rashi, as Rashi explains, milishon im, in a way of if you go out to war, if you do the battle of prayer, shezeh inyan shel rishut, because it's something you might do or you might not. Ki ma she'avodat ha'tfilah im milchemet chova, the idea that the service of prayer is a battle that we must take part in, etzel kol echad ve'echad in Yisrael, for every single Jew, harei ze rak b'tchilat ha'avodato. This is actually at the beginning of a person's service. So you imagine the case that a person comes to spiritual consciousness. And now at this point of spiritual consciousness, he or she realizes, I'm filled with all kinds of earthly passions. I want these passions to be channeled to the divine. Of course, we need the earthly passions a bit in our daily life as well. So you have to be a wholesome, normal person with the right hormones and everything else working properly. But there is appropriate times and inappropriate times. So you say, I want this to be channeled in a spiritual way. But after this, so you might become very good at this. And then, then you get a choice of two approaches to serving God, Torah or Tfilah. There's Torah, studying Torah, and there's prayer. And so you could put your efforts into one or the other or both, you know, sometimes this one, sometimes that one, but it doesn't have the same urgency. When the person was racked by terrible passions, then he really has to struggle with those passions and try to divert them and get them focused in a spiritual direction. But now he or she has come to a certain like spiritual plateau, and now there are different dimensions, different aspects. So one is prayer, more prayer, and each time you pray can be a very beautiful spiritual experience. But there's also studying Torah. Okay, so now let's have a look, line 12. V'inyan bazeh, now what this means is, the name of Vor Bechama Mekomot, it's explained a number of different places in Torah. Sheyesh Shnei Ofanim BeBerur HaYetzer HaRa. There are two approaches to purify the evil desire. BeDerech Milchama, one is in a way of battle, which is the way we've been talking about in prayer. And the other way is UveDerech Shalom, in a way of peace. Very fascinating idea here. Uvichlalut, and in general, hareze achiluk, this is the difference between avodat hatfila, between the service of prayer, shat krava, which the Zohar calls a time of battle, la avodat haTorah, to the service of Torah, shedrachei adachei noam v'chol netivotei shalom. It says about Torah, its pathways are pleasant pathways and all its roads are peace. So, a person can either pray with immense passion or study Torah. V'hainu, now what this means is, she'avodat ha'tfilah, the service of prayer, hu inyan beru ha'yetzara, means the sifting of the evil desire, milamata lemaila, from below to above. Because we've got the burning inside us and we're reaching upwards to the higher fire which is beyond. Al yedei itlapshut ha'mevarer, through the enclothing of the one who is doing the transforming, which is the Nefesh Elokid, the divine soul, Bamit Barer, in the Nefesh Bahamid, in the animal soul, which is being transformed. So in the picture, we haven't actually got the divine soul, but it's as if from an exalted source comes the divine soul, which is there in the heart and helping the heart to connect above. So there is the divine soul. But what it does, it's all reaching upwards. In the avodah of prayer, it's all reaching upwards.
Where's the animal soul?
Where is the animal soul?
If that's the divine soul.
Well, the animal soul usually is seen as nestling in the heart, okay. And the divine soul actually nestles in the head.
Okay.
And then it comes down from the head into the heart.
Okay.
And this process of the divine soul getting into the heart and elevating it, it needs effort, needs battle. But the transformation by means of Torah is in a different way. It's from above to below. Kayodua, as is known, Torah nikre, Torah is called lechem min hashamayim, food from heaven. The Torah comes to us from heaven. The Torah comes from God. The Torah is taught to us by great sages. It's like percolating down to us. And we just have to stand in that beautiful waterfall, you could say, of the Torah teachings which are coming down to us, and that has a transformative quality for ourselves. Take us at this moment, thank God, sitting here studying this teaching. So this beautiful teaching comes to us. We're able to study it together. We're not going through a struggle with the animal soul and the different forces at this moment. It's a peaceful moment. So this is the Berur, this is the transformation through peace. And there is the theory, the concept in Chabad Hasidic thought, that, and in general Jewish thought, that through a person studying Torah, it has a transformative effect on the person. But it's not so obvious. It's not in a way of an obvious battle of obvious passions. And the passion is either this way or it's that way. It's just more that the Torah gets into the being of the person, into the mind and into the heart and into the way we look at life and into the perceptions. And the Torah, in a way, imperceptibly becomes our consciousness. And it's a gradual and peaceful process. It's a kind of a peaceful invasion. That's the Torah takes us over in a peaceful way. And in fact, b'derech mimela, it's in an automatic way. Shal yedei limud ha-Torah, because through studying Torah, ha-adam mamshich u-megaleh, the man or woman, draws down and reveals elokut b'nafsho, godliness in one's soul. Well, you could read it two ways. There's the godliness in the Torah, which comes down and then impregnates us. And you could say there's the godliness which is in our soul. Elokut shebenafsho. The godliness which is in the soul, which becomes illuminated by the Torah teachings coming down. Va'al yedei zeh, and through this, mitpatel u'mitbarer, yahayetzehara me'elav. The evil desire becomes nullified and becomes transformed automatically by itself. So this is the birur, this is the transformation in a way of peace, not in a way of war. Va'al pize muvan, now we can understand, ma'ashe birur ha'yetzara al yedei milchama, Now we can understand that the idea of the transforming of the evil desire through war, Shuinyana Bodhat Hatfila, which is the idea of the service of prayer, the challenging service of prayer, Nikra Milchemet HaRoshut, is called by Rashi, looking at another way of looking at the Sedra, the permitted battle. Ki yeshno beru ba'ofen shel menucha, because there's battle in a way of peace, al yedei avodah shel Torah, through the service of Torah.
So?
Right, so that's over the page to page 10. And then he speaks about the way in which the end of the Sedra of the week talks about peace, and that this fits in with this interpretation, that we have a relationship with God where either there is this inner battle taking place, or which means that we are struggling to connect the fire in the heart upwards with its source, the fire beyond, and then the fire in the heart will be transformed and it'll be a spiritual love rather than an earthly love, or a completely different way of dealing with it, which is that the Torah comes down and pours radiance of Torah onto the heart, and that transforms and subdues the fire, and the person becomes more balanced and wholesome in their daily life. Very optimistic picture, but that's the ideal.
Chassidus is just endless optimism.
Well, you see, you can be optimistic, and then when something doesn't work, you try to, you know, you work on that level as well. But you don't have to start assuming that it's going to fail. Now, the last section, section Dalad, connects this to the month of Elul. V'yesh l'kashya amur la'el, and what we've said above can be connected b'inyan shnei ofanei avodah, the idea of two kinds of service, tefillah and Torah, prayer and Torah study, iminyano shel chodesh Elul, relating to the whole idea of the month of Elul, which we're in. Now, in Hasidic teachings, focusing on Likutei Torah, already for several weeks in Likutei Torah, it talks about Elul. Let's move to line 24. The Hinektiv, it's written, Ani l'dodi v'dodi li. I am to my beloved and my beloved is to me. And you see, that makes the word Elul, the initial letters.
Wow.
Aleph Lamed Vav Lamed. Elul, that is the word Elul. I am to my beloved and my beloved is to me. Haroe b'shoshanim, who pastures in the lilies.
Oh,
right, now that's a beautiful line from Song of Songs.
Lilies or roses?
Roses, no.
Well, it's interesting that in modern Hebrew, it's a rose, but in the Zohar, it's a lily.
Okay.
And the reason why we say it's a lily is because we say it's got 13 petals. Now, I don't know if a rose necessarily has 13 petals, but there's the idea that the lily has 13 petals. Now, there are two explanations of this word, pasturing in the lilies. Perush echad, or rose. One explanation is, Sheshoshana yesh batleitza alin. The lily has 13 petals, keneged yud gimel mechilin derachmi, corresponding to the 13 attributes of mercy. A very important prayer, which is said on Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, it's the 13 attributes of mercy. Hashem, Hashem, Keu, Rachum, Mechanun. And what we say, what the sages tell us, V'hainu shebechodesh Elul, in the month of Elul, Mi'irot Yud Gimel Midot HaRachamim. The 13 attributes of mercy shine from God to us. V'inyan zeh shayich b'chlalut l'avodat ha'tfilah. And that helps us in prayer, because when we pray, we know that there's this beautiful, warm radiance coming from God of the 13 attributes of mercy. Now, that's one way of understanding this Roe B'Shoshanim, that he pastures in the lilies. But there's a second explanation. Altikri Shoshanim Eila Shoshonim. The sages say, don't read the word Shoshanim, which means lilies or roses. Eila Shoshonim, those who learn Mishnah. Ba'otam Shoshonim Batorah, people who are studying Torah. So the other way of reading this word is not 13 attributes of mercy, which relates to prayer, but study, which relates to Torah. So we got the two ideas of Torah and prayer. So in other words, that is the preparation, the month of preparation of Elul is a time when there is both Torah and Tefillah, and that is the way that we are preparing for Rosh Hashanah. So let's just go to the last paragraph. V'zeh yitchon dechodesh Elul al kol hashanah kula. That's what's special about the month of Elul. We're in now over the entire year. In Shemalato, its special quality, Hilorak b'inyan ha'tfilah, is not only because of the prayer, which is the first explanation of feeding among the lilies, elegam b'inyan ha'torah, but also because of Torah, the second explanation. Shelechein tzarich lo'otzif yoter b'limud ha'torah, we have to try to add to our study of Torah. Shezoi avoda shebederech menucha v'shalom. That's the service in a way of peace, dafka. Ubefrat, and especially al yedei limud pnimiut haTorah, through studying the inner dimension of Torah. Razin, secret dimension, v'razin derazin, secrets of secrets, shevetorah. Delei taman lo kushya v'lo machloket. It's an interesting thing that in the Zohar it makes the comment that while in Mishnah study or Talmudic study later, there's arguments the whole time, and the divisions, this one holds this, that one holds that. In Kabbalah, it's much more unified. Everyone is unified together, although there are different streams of Kabbalistic thinking, but within any text, especially like the Zohar or the everything is seen as fitting together smoothly. Kol algam hafatzat hamayanot chutzah bedachi shalom, including spreading the wellsprings of Torah in a way of peace. Va'al yedei ze poalim amitzit shlemut ha'inyan, and through that we really achieve the idea of padah b'shalom nafshi. You see, there's the idea of being redeemed in peace. Being redeemed in peace means that the battle stops being a battle and it becomes peace of a genuine kind. Gam ovav yashlim ito. His enemies become his friends. And that will be begulah hamitit vashlima al yedei Mashiach tzidkenu, with the true and ultimate redemption through Mashiach. Sh'az yikuyam ha'yiud. Then the promise will be kept. Mal'al ha'aretz deya et Hashem, the world will be filled with knowledge of God. Kamayim la'yom mechasim, as the waters cover the sea. And then there will be peace and connection with God by everyone in the world.
Amen. May it be so in our
days. Well, we ended. We came to the end.
I know, wow.
First time in months.